Good morning, Wall Street Breakfast listeners, and happy President's Day. Since the U.S. markets are closed, we aren't publishing our usual edition of Wall Street Breakfast. Instead, we're sharing the latest episode from Let's Talk ETFs, another Seeking Alpha podcast. Hosted by Jonathan Liss, an ETFs aficionado, the show goes to every corner of the ETF industry to share key trends and new ideas. This week's episode is a special one, as Jonathan sits with a friend who recently inherited some money and is looking to build an ETF portfolio. The episode walks through that process. Have a listen and enjoy your day off from the markets.
Welcome to Let's Talk ETFs. I'm your host, Jonathan Liss, and I've been closely tracking the ETF space for more than 13 years through a variety of roles here at SeekingAlpha.com. Each week, a different guest and I will take an in-depth look at a particular aspect of the rapidly evolving exchange-traded fund space, with a focus on how investors can best utilize ETFs to reach their investing goals. Before we begin, a brief disclaimer. This podcast is for entertainment and educational purposes only. Nothing said here should be taken as investment advice. All opinions expressed on this show are those of the individuals expressing them alone. A full set of disclosures will be included at the end of this show. You can subscribe to Let's Talk ETFs on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. A few notes for this episode of Let's Talk ETFs. I use several key tools at SeekingAlpha.com, mostly our ETF screener, which you can find by typing the words ETF screener into the search bar at the top of the site. I also use our ETF quote pages extensively, including several parts of those pages that are available for Seeking Alpha Premium subscribers. Premium currently offers a 2-week free trial, so go and check that out now if you haven't yet. Also, all disclosures happen within the podcast as we mention specific fund names, but just as a reminder, I am currently long QQQ, FIW, CIBR, and VNQ. And as always, nothing said on this podcast should be taken as investing advice. Finally, the next episode of this show will be in 2 weeks on Wednesday, February 26th. Wishing all of our listeners a great President's Day holiday. For reference purposes, this podcast is being recorded on the morning of January 21st, 2020. All right, we are back for a special edition of Let's Talk ETFs. I'm going to do something different today. Instead of talking to an industry expert, I have a good friend of mine here, and I've been giving her some advice. Obviously, I'm not a professional. She understands that
she is not a professional.
She's making all the decisions here, but
my own woman.
Yes, but we're Americans. We like to do things ourselves. We don't like to pay advisors if we can keep the money ourselves. And so, helping her find ETFs to achieve her financial objectives here. So, just to kind of give a little bit of background, you had these two chunks of money that you came into, and your objective was one of them you wanted to put into riskier assets because you didn't need it for how much time?
I wanted it to be long-term savings, basically for retirement.
Right.
And I'm currently 36 years
36.
old.
So we're talking about, let's say, 30 years or longer.
Yeah.
Long period of time. And then you had a second amount of money that you were going to possibly need in the next couple of years.
Yeah. So the second chunk of money. So I think the way we had broken it down was that it was about $230,000 in the beginning. And that we were looking at for a 30-year period. And now we're talking about $180,000. That's the second installment of inheritance. And that piece of money we want to divide so that about half of it will be available to us in 3 to 4 years from now should we want to do an addition on our house.
Okay.
And half of it will be a long-term investment. We're not certain we want to do an addition on our house, but we do want to have that money available should we choose to.
Sure. Or should something else come up also, you want to have it split between different assets that are unlikely to be correlated to each other. So that if there's a big sell-off in the stock market and bond prices go up, first of all, that portion of your portfolio is actually gaining to offset some of those losses. But also, yes, the assumption is that the betas will be quite different than something like the S&P 500, and that the standard deviations, the drawdowns you'll see on those positions, will be much more manageable, so you could sleep well at night should you actually need that money. You don't have to worry about losing 50% of the value.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We last sat in August, roughly 5 months ago, mm-hmm, when you were starting out this process.
Mm-hmm.
And the decisions, I think, that you had come to were that you were going to put the largest chunk of it in a couple of core holdings and then buy a bunch of satellite funds also. So your core holdings in terms of position sizes were the QQQ, the NASDAQ 100, loaded up on those really large, successful in terms of market return, biggest American companies, last companies that still produce anything, Apple, Google, Microsoft, yes, Amazon, Facebook. And the performance on that has obviously
also the Vanguard
continued to be quite good. Right. Then you also put another chunk of money into VEA, the Vanguard FTSE Developed Market. And again, that's everything ex-US. It's Europe and developed Asia, so places like Japan, Australia, Singapore, in addition to developed European countries, so pretty much all of Western Europe. You also took a holding in Emerging Markets Fund, IEMG, which is the iShares Core MSCI Emerging Markets Fund. That one is much lower cost than EEM, has more holdings also, so it's a better alternative there. And then you also had taken positions in a couple of satellite holdings that either you felt were good trends. So I see you've got cybersecurity here. The ticker on that is CIBR. That is, mm-hmm, a fund I'm long also. You have First Trust Water.
Yep.
Another fund I own. You also have KWeb, the Crane Shares CSI China Internet, and that one is up 39% in 5 months. So well done there.
Yes.
And then you have a couple of what
gender
I
diversity
label, yeah, as ESG type funds or socially responsible investing, not to mix those two terms up too much. But so you took NACP, the Impact Shares NAACP Minority ETF, and then the SPDR SSGA Gender Diversity Fund, ticker symbol SHE, and those are fairly small positions. But my understanding of how those indexes are constructed is that they look at the corporate makeup of or corporate governance of companies listed in the U.S. In the case of SHE, it would be looking for companies that have X percent of their corporate governors being female. I don't know if it's 50% or what the actual cutoff is. It's probably,
I forget. I looked into it.
And then the NACP fund, which is the minority diversity one, I assume is the same thing, but just with hiring of minorities in terms of their corporate governance. And then you also have one other fund, which I think we would... you have two other funds here, actually. One is the Vanguard Real Estate ETF, VNQ. That's a nice diversifier in terms of those betas because it's REITs. And then you also have BAR, which is the lowest cost physical gold fund on the market. When we spoke in August, I think there was a feeling that the yield curve had just inverted and there was a high likelihood that U.S. And other places were headed towards recession or much slower growth. Since then, there's been good news on the trade front in terms of U.S.-China. There's been good news in other places. Just today, the U.S. and France backed off on hitting each other with all kinds of additional tariffs. And generally speaking, the economic numbers that have come in have been solid. There's not really any indication that the U.S. will be in a recession in the next 12 months. And so definitely still makes sense to have some diversifier with physical metals. That catches us up to where we are today.
Do we want to talk about the two orders I had in?
Yes. Okay, so there were two other positions. You had put in I guess it was in August.
I changed them again. I changed them a couple of times to try to put an order in that would work, but it never
caught. So you used a limit order, not a market order, which is generally recommended in case there's some kind of weird flash crash or weird behavior. You don't necessarily want to get filled at a market order because it'll fill at any price that's trading at that second. However, the downside with limit orders is if you put them in below the current price or even just maybe slightly above it, but the price moves up before you hit go on the order, the position can never fill. And so that was the case on both SPLV and VXF. So whatever price you put in August, which was around the price it was trading at the time.
In August, I might have put it in at market. You think?
No, if you put in a market order, it would have been filled.
Okay.
But you might have put a limit order in like 0.5% below the price. And it never filled because the markets have just been basically a line straight up here. So market never revisited lower price on those. So my recommendation here, do with it what you will.
I will.
Is to put the limit order a few pennies above what the current price is and let it get filled into the open today at whatever that higher price is. And if it spikes at the open for whatever reason, I would go back in and put it in again because you don't necessarily want to be sitting in this much cash right now. Would have been nice to have that cash working for you in the form of equities. But as people that don't try to pretend like we have a crystal ball and know which direction the market is going in, I don't think it's worthwhile to try to time the market and wait for things to come down here. That's why you're going to load up on fixed income or on safer assets so that you don't really necessarily have to worry about a sell-off because you have other parts of the portfolio that will offset that.
Okay. So both of these, because we had discussed maybe.
Yeah. So in terms of the position in SPLV, which is the, I want to say, Invesco S&P 500 Low Vol ETF. Confirmed.
Nice.
Yeah. So for that fund, I'm not sure I'd go that big there necessarily. The biggest holdings are things like Eversource Energy, DTE Energy, Duke, American Electric, I mean, Southern Company. You may as well just buy utilities ETF if you're going to buy this. I think you may want to go for more of a blended approach than value
here. Okay, so then we'll have to look at that because then I won't go in at a limit a few pennies above for this.
Yeah, I'd probably just add to your position in the Qs right now because, again, you're going to be offsetting risk in other places. And the biggest holdings
there. Should we do all of it in Qs or should we do a portion in a utilities ETF?
I think it depends whether you want to limit the risk in the equity portion of your portfolio and take on more risk on the fixed income side of the portfolio, or if we should just go super safe on the fixed income side of the portfolio and put the money in assets likely to perform well, even in a prolonged sell-off and recession, and stay riskier on the equity side of the portfolio. I would personally, if you're not starved for income out of this portfolio, I don't see the long-term upshot in utilities outweighing things like Microsoft and Apple and, again, these massive companies that really just print money on a quarterly basis at this point.
Okay.
What I would do is something along the lines of what this guy Larry Swedro, who's well-known in the asset management space, and the New York Times has written him up a couple times. He created this thing called the Larry Portfolio, which is just, I guess, taken from his name. But what it does essentially is instead of trying to spread out risk across the equity portions of the portfolio, he takes on higher equity risk. And then in the fixed income portion, instead of buying things like corporate bonds that can sell off a fair amount, he buys super safe short-term bonds. U.S. debt. For the bond portion.
We talked about that last time.
Yeah, so that, I mean, I think you can probably spread it around. I don't know if you need to limit it just to U.S. Treasuries. We'll take a look at that shortly.
Okay. So
going
back here, that means that what we are going to invest in the SPLV, right? So we have about $28,000 to invest there.
Okay.
And then in terms of the VXF, there we have about $18,000 to invest, which is the money that was sitting in cash, unfortunately, because of those limits I put.
Yes. Okay. And for those that are unfamiliar, the VXF is the Vanguard Extended Market Index ETF, and it will essentially add the mid and small cap segments of the U.S. market. So I would probably just take that money that you were going to purchase SPLV with and just put it into the Qs.
Just do it in the Qs.
Yeah.
And we'll do the U.S. short-term bonds.
And then with the additional money that you have, you wanted to divide that, correct?
Yeah. So then, okay. So I'm just going to summarize. So now, what I think I'm choosing to do.
Yes.
Based on our conversation and my thought is that I think I'm going to take the SPLV. I'm going to invest it all in the Qs today, a few pennies above its market value.
Right.
Unless we see a spike in the market today.
And then I'll adjust that. And then you'll just go back and readjust it.
And then I'll adjust it. And then the VXF, I'm going to leave where it is. I'm going to also try to put it in at limit a few pennies above. And we'll leave that there. And we'll incorporate the short-term U.S. debt with the other money.
Exactly. And then what I would likely do with the additional money that you have going into equities is divide it proportionally into the positions you have already. Just to be clear here, you have commission-free trades.
Yeah.
On TD Ameritrade. That's where everything's been going. But since August, they've actually rolled out commission-free trades, which means that you don't even have to worry. If you want to add to a position and just add 4 shares to one of your smaller positions at a price of $7, it wouldn't have necessarily made sense to do that. If you were just adding a few hundred dollars worth of something, you were paying a couple of percent to get in and out of that position, even at a $7 commission. Now you're just looking at the spread on the thing. So assuming the spread is actually reasonable, the distance between the bid and the ask, it's reasonable to just buy a couple shares because you're not paying any commission at this point. So to go into each of these positions proportionally actually makes sense.
Okay, so we can talk about how to do that?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because it looks different how I would do that than how I was buying shares before, adding them to it.
Well, actually, I think what you're going to do is you're going to look at what percentage each of these things is in your portfolio.
Okay.
And then you'll take the amount of money you have going in. Let's say it's half of 180. Let's say it's $90,000. Yeah. You'll divide that up proportionally.
And then the other 90K.
So the other 90K is what you're trying to determine what to do with right now. Is your primary goal to preserve capital?
My primary goal is to preserve capital, and it is to earn interest.
You want to earn some interest on it also, but if you had to choose, like, let's say to get an extra 1% a year on that money, but there's a risk that it could sell off an additional 10 or 20% when I actually need it, or I don't want to stretch for yield, I want to make sure the capital really is preserved, and you don't want to keep it in cash because inflation or currency fluctuations can eat away at that. So yeah, if you're willing to stretch for yield a bit, then I think you'd probably expand the circle a little bit here. I think you want at least some of it in TIPS, treasury and inflation protected securities, again, to make sure that if there is inflation, you earn a return that is above that. And then if you want to reach a little bit for yield, then I think you probably want to look at some corporate or municipal bond funds also, because the yields on those should be significantly higher.
Okay. But the majority we'd probably want to put in the short-term fixed income.
I think so, yeah. So what I would do here as a starting point is, now granted I'm biased, but I would start out right on Seeking Alpha's ETF screener.
It's always open.
Always open. I helped build it, so I know what's here. I would go into the fixed income section, And we have a section
called... Wow, it's
called,
so clean.
Yeah, very clean design. We have a section called Ultra Short.
So under the asset class, you're looking in fixed income, U.S. government
treasuries, short duration.
Okay.
Exactly. We're looking at things that have at least $500 million in assets under management. The expense ratios here are lower than they are in the other category because you're talking about essentially just U.S. paper here. And in terms of holdings, they're going to be more concentrated. Their mandates are just to hold, for example, like SHY, 1 to 3 year U.S. Treasury bonds. You're actually looking at some yields here that are not that low, in all honesty. I would probably recommend that you go with this fund here, Bill, the Spider Bloomberg Barclays 1 to 3 month T-bill ETF. So that'll be the first position there. That's your position that gets you roughly 2% a year in
yield,
right, in income. That should be significantly safer in terms of the principal there, should there be some kind of prolonged downturn. The other option there, I think, is G-bill, Goldman Sachs Treasury Access, zero to 1 year ETF.
We invested in G-bill in August.
Great. I would add to that position.
Okay.
I would start out by bolstering that position significantly. Now, for the rest of what you do with your fixed income, again, you want something which is safe, I think. I would take some tips also. They're going to pay lower dividends right now, but not necessarily significantly lower. I would probably go with a fund like STIP here. It is a 0 to 5 year TIPS bond ETF, and it's offering a 2.05% dividend yield right now. And again, should there be inflation, that should keep pace nicely. And you can't argue with a 6 basis point expense ratio on that one either. So that works on multiple levels there. Mm-hmm.
And then the last would be corporate municipal bonds, correct?
Corporate or municipal. I think you probably...
What about a mix? No?
You would need to pick up a fund that had other things in it. Also, there isn't going to be a fund that just has corporate and municipal bonds in it. I think you still want to be risk averse here.
Yes.
Okay. Correct?
Yeah.
And that means you're looking for triple A rated or investment grade at the very least.
Okay.
So that'll be triple B or higher in terms of the ratings of the underlying. And you're looking at yields. You can add roughly 1.25% to 1.5% yield. I'm now in the fixed income corporate U.S. investment grade category here. And the three funds that show up here for over $500 million are all relatively large. LQD is definitely the 800-pound gorilla in the room, the iShares iBox investment grade corporate bond ETF.
Okay.
That one is a $35.5 billion fund. You've also got another iShares fund, USIG, the iShares Broad U.S. Dollar Investment Grade Corporate Bond ETF. That one's got a lower expense ratio, just 6 basis points versus 15.
Uh-huh.
And then CORP, you have the PIMCO Investment Grade Corporate Bond Index ETF, the 20 basis point expense ratio, which I suppose is offset by the fact that it pays...
Yeah.
A slightly higher yield. No, it actually doesn't. Sorry, USIG pays the highest yield there and has the lowest expense ratio of the bunch. Let's just dig under the hood here a little more and just see what the breakdown is in terms of holdings on these funds. Okay, so LQD is really 100% in corporate. Top holding is a GE, which don't love, although nothing is really a very big part of the portfolio here. And in a second, we're going to actually go to their site and understand what the breakdown is in terms of the
ratings.
This is
incredible, Yoni.
Well, this is a lot of the information that I'm looking at here is also...
behind the Seeking Alpha premium paywall. We've added tons of data over the last year or so, and it makes it
so really, easy to dig.
It makes it easy to dig through things. Yeah. Okay, so let us go over to iShares site and understand what the breakdown of these specific corporate portfolios are, because the other two fixed income funds you looked at are going to be pretty much entirely in treasuries, and so you know what the rating on all of those is. But in terms of these corporate portfolios, you may as well know what it is you're getting here, because if you have a lot of things that are triple B rated, a single downgrade will force the portfolio, these ETFs, to dump those positions because they're no longer investment grade. And so I think you want to make sure that
we stay with the higher ratings.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay.
You know, it's interesting. I'm just looking back to our notes from August, and we spoke briefly about my intentions for January when I would invest the second chunk of money. And we're pretty much in line with what we spoke about there.
Yeah.
Except for gold.
I mean,
I think
the returns have probably been better than you would have been expecting. But
gold is the only place where we...
Where what?
We spoke in August about the fact that I might want to invest more in gold now. I guess it will be part of that proportional first chunk.
Yeah, it's, again, you can add to that position proportionally if you want to have some kind of a commodity position offsetting. What I like about BAR is that it costs very little to actually hold it. So that's nice, at least. So I'm now on iShares website, heading over to their fixed income funds, and we're going to dig in to a couple of those funds that we looked at. The first, again, was LQD, the iShares iBox dollar investment grade corporate bond ETF. The second fund there was USIG, the broad USD investment grade corporate bond ETF.
Which we had talked about this summer, too.
Yes. Okay.
What are you looking for right now? I lost you.
I'm looking to see what the breakdown of the actual bonds is in the portfolio in terms of what sorts of ratings they have. Okay, here we go. If you want to stick with things that are only AAA rated and don't have B rated things in them also, then QLTA is a better option. Higher credit quality. Excludes triple B rated bonds, sacrificing yield for safety.
So what I'm looking at now...
Overweights shorter term bonds, so there will be less interest rate risk on this fund.
Okay.
And you're giving up about 40 to 50 basis points or 0.5% in yield to greater security.
Which is fine because of the other investments.
Correct.
Okay, so... The four funds we're talking about are QLTA, STIP,
yeah,
GBIL,
yeah,
and BIL.
Yes.
Okay. And with BIL, we spoke about investing the majority there, but now I'm feeling like QLTA is where...
Well, BIL is going to still be the safest of all the funds because AAA-rated corporate bonds are still corporate bonds. The U.S. Treasury, if... The U.S. Treasury has its rating downgraded significantly, and the feeling is they might default on payments. You probably have bigger issues to deal with globally than
So what I'm thinking right now is, what if we were looking to hold at about 40% BIL?
So keep in mind, BIL is the portion here that should stay super safe. The underlying capital you have in there will fluctuate very, very little.
Understood.
So think in the back of your head, have an amount of cash that you're going to want to have on hand for a home renovation or any other issue that may come up at some point. Keep in mind that if you want to have X amount, that's the amount I would put in there.
Okay. Okay, that's good advice.
So if you want to make sure you have $50,000 for a rainy day.
Or for that.
You don't necessarily have to put all 50 in it, because some of these other things are pretty safe also relative to equities. But I get close to the
full. So you know what? I think I'm going to do 50% there. But then why do I want QLTA and not just to divide the rest between GBIL and STIP?
Well, just because you had indicated that you wanted to pick up some additional yield there.
Yeah. And so the QLTA might allow me to do that.
Exactly. And you don't actually need BIL. GBIL is just as safe as BIL.
Okay.
The only difference is it goes out to a full year on the maturities, but it's all treasuries as opposed to just 1 to 3 months.
So maybe I'll do 50% GBIL, 25% STIP.
Right. You already have something in GBIL. So what you may want to do is maybe get up to 50% with it, and then whatever you have remaining, you can split in the other two.
Great. Sounds good. Well, but we might want to stay over 50% because it did allow me a little bit of security in the long term as well. So I'm not only looking for the security in the short term, I'm also looking for that security in the long term.
Yeah.
So I might...
That makes sense. And you can always move things around if your circumstances change in some way or your
awesome in some way. Awesome. Okay, so let's sum this up. I'm going to sum up what I learned today, okay?
Nice.
What I learned today and what I decided is that first we were looking at those two orders I had out, which were never filled
since August because of how well the market has done.
Because we thought maybe the market would not do so well, but again, we're not genies. We don't know the future, so we didn't know. But I had said to you that I'm not going to play around a lot. So I didn't play around a lot, but now what I want to do is set a limit that's a few pennies above where the market will open and try to invest that same amount. We're going to do QQQ instead of SPLV.
Right, and that will be your core holding.
Yeah, and then we'll also... You still want your
small and mid exposure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the next thing we're going to do, which I'm going to need a little help with just in terms of technically how to do it, is taking the first 50% of the new chunk of money, the first 90,000, and splitting it up proportionately to where my current portfolio is.
Right.
And then take the other 50%, which there's a good chance we're going to want to use in 3 to 4 years from now for a home addition. And that we're going to split 50% into G-bills. I made the decision that I'm not going to adjust what I'm holding currently in G-bills because I want to keep that confidence and security also in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
And then do a quarter in STIP and a quarter in QLTA.
Nice. Sounds good. Nice.
All in under an hour.
Nice henna tattoo.
Oh, thanks. Thank you. It's a feather.
Oh.
See?
Yes, I see it.
Okay. Thank you so much. That was really helpful.
This was great, and hopefully it helped some of the listeners also.
I hope so. Take charge, my friends.
All right. Until next time.
As an addendum, my friend, after doing a bit of further research and thinking about it, decided she wanted to spread out her equity exposure a little bit more. And so she ended up deciding, in addition to adding to her position in the QQQ and buying VXF, which is a position that never filled back in August, she decided to put a roughly 10% allocation, $30,000, into VLUE. That is the iShares Edge MSCI USA Value Factor ETF. That is a multi-cap value tilted fund. Top holdings are things like AT&T, Intel, IBM, Bank of America, Citi, Pfizer, General Motors, Walgreens, CVS. Definitely gives her a very different chunk of the market than what the Qs are offering. There's a little bit of overlapping, things like Intel. But it gives her more of an allocation to the full breadth of the U.S. market, more of an allocation to financials. The NASDAQ 100 is, of course, X financials. So she gets her Bank of America's in there.
I just also want to remind listeners that this was really a thought exercise more than anything. Nothing said here represents a recommendation of any sort. My friend is going to continue to do her own due diligence, but of course, nothing here is financial advice in any way, shape, or form.
If you've been enjoying Let's Talk ETFs, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or whichever podcast platform you prefer. And if you find this podcast useful, please consider leaving a review on one of those platforms so that other investors can discover it. You can also find this podcast on SeekingAlpha.com by typing Let's Talk ETFs into the search bar at the top of the site.